this time of spring, when we celebrate many things, including Easter and Passover, I share these words from the congregation Beth El at Sudbury, Massachusetts. Passover. What sacrifices would we make for freedom today? What would we leave? How far would we go? How deeply would we look inside ourselves? Our ancestors had no time to await the rising of the bread. Yet we, who have that time, what do we do to be worthy of our precious inheritance? We were slaves in Egypt, but now we are free. How easy it is for us to relive the days of our bondage. We sit in the warmth and comfort of our Seder. How much harder to relieve the pain of those who live in the bitterness of slavery today. Welcome. I am Michael Nelson, the Unitarian Universalist minister at this wonderful fellowship. Whether you need to seek in a narrow path or a wide and ever-widening one, you are welcome here. Whether you feel quiet or want to share your joy with everyone, you are welcome here. Whether you are comfortable in community or prefer to be in small groups or alone, may you still find goodness in others. May you openly welcome the beauty of spring, its renewal. Whoever you are, whoever you love, may you be renewed in that love daily. We welcome you to the Manhattan Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. No one lights a lamp and puts it under a basket or in a hidden place. Rather, one puts it on a lampstand so that all who pass will see its light. This morning, we light our chalice so that those who have been in bondage and are in pain may be relieved and find joy in renewal. I call your attention to the announcements in our order of service, and in addition to those, Tom Manny has asked me to recruit, get people to come and help varnish doors this week. So Tom, if you would raise your hand, he's the guy, the go-to guy to get the doors varnished. He needs some help. He's been doing some great work out there. So now let us stand and sing our opening hymn 361, Enter, Rejoice, and Come In. Enter, rejoice, and come in.
Enter, rejoice, and come in. rejoice and come in. Today will be a joyful day. Enter, rejoice, and come in.
Now's the time in our order of service when we share those personal joys and sorrows that bring depth and breadth and height to our lives. My mother, as many of you know, has a kind of low-level kind of cancer that seems to be rather frisky, which brings her back into the hospital again and again. She returned home yesterday, and when I last heard, she was sleeping in her chair joyfully. So it's a joy and a deep concern. Who else has a joy or a concern or a mixture of both to share?
Dick Beeman, I am joyful that Steve Mull is still able to wisecrack audibly.
My dad left on a long trip, a deployment.
To where?
He left last weekend. He went to Afghanistan for another year.
Thank you, Connor.
Amy Stormo. I've had a lot of joy overflowing in my life over the last week. I was lucky enough to go get to visit my grandparents up in South Dakota for the last week, so I got to spend some time with them on the farm, which was wonderful. Haven't been there for more than probably an afternoon since I was about 12, so that was really great. Also, I successfully defended my thesis last Wednesday, which was a huge relief. I'm doing some last-minute changes still, but that went well, and I also received an Outstanding Graduate Student Award from my program. So it's been a wonderful week for me.
Now I would like to welcome Sandy Bussing to share her information and her plea for help for the Fairy Godmothers Fund. Please come forward, Sandy. Thank you.
I want to thank you very much for using the Fairy Godmothers as your giving. Am I okay? Can you hear me? As your giving today, we are an organization that needs all the help we can get. We give our money out on a quarterly basis. This quarter, we have given 16 grants for about $5,800. I'm gonna give you two quick examples because we help both the old and the young. We had an elderly woman who is on disability. She has two grandchildren that she takes responsibility for. And her teeth, the dentist told her teeth were in terrible shape, and she needed to have the teeth cleaned and four teeth taken care of. And we were able to give her the money to do that. A second example is a young person. We do not ordinarily do college students, but we do non-traditional students. This young lady came to us last summer. She has two children. She works part-time. She goes to school part-time. She was to graduate in December. And we ask on our form that everybody fills out that people give back when they're able to at some point in their lives. She wrote a lovely letter to us that came in early January saying that she had finished her degree and that our gift had been a wonderful psychological push for her, that she felt somebody out there really cared. She had a teaching job that would be starting second semester. in a public school system, and she said, I'll be looking out for who I can give back to. So thank you very much.
Hello, will all of the children please come down? I'm actually gonna have you guys sit on the stage today. I'll sit over here. Perfect. Okay, you can sit down if you want to. You gonna stand? Hello. Hello. All right. So on Parents' Night Out, which we do the first Friday of every month, we had a superhero scavenger hunt theme. And everyone came either dressed in costume or made costumes. Who remembers what some of the superhero characters were? Buzz Lightyear was there. Robber Guy was there. Super Talk-A-Lot was there. Do you remember who you were? He was Captain Hook, a superhero, Captain Hook. What were some of the other ones? Do you guys remember? I think we had a Captain America.
Mismatch Girl, and that was me.
Mismatch Girl.
I got a bilbo on my eye.
Oh, that's sad.
Batgirl.
Batgirl.
Super Sloan.
Super Sloan.
Optimus Prime.
Optimus Prime. Okay, what do superheroes have in common? Do we know sort of what are traits that superheroes have? What are some of the things that they all share?
Strength.
What else? What do they all have in common? Let's think. Yeah.
Power.
Their own symbol.
Superpowers.
They can fly.
Some of them can fly.
The Batmans can fly.
Anything else? Do they all wear like a costume of some sort? Do they sort of transform into somebody else?
Yeah.
Do they do good things or bad things?
Good
things. Do they help people?
Yeah.
They do. Okay, so let's think about this. Today is Easter, and it's the celebration of the biblical superhero, Jesus. Okay, now, Jesus had some superpowers, some people believe, and he did help a lot of people, and he did sort of transform into something new, this idea. Now, this is what some people believe about Jesus. Do we think that he was just a man, right, at the end of the day? And are all superheroes really just people? Batman and Robin are people, right? And then they transform into something that we call super, right? So do you guys think that you could all be superheroes? You could. Do you think you can transform into something that helps people?
No.
What? Yeah. Yes. I think so. Do you think you could transform into something that brings good into the world?
Yes.
Okay. So on this day, I think we need to think about how we all have the ability to transform into something super that can do good in the world. So to end our children's story time, I would like everyone to get up and do their best superhero pose. Are you ready? You've had practice. Let's do this, people. Ready? On the count of three. 1, 2, 3. Superheroes! Yeah! Okay. Go now in peace. Go now in peace. May the Spirit of God surround you everywhere.
Good morning, everyone. As a lot of you know, about 5 years ago, I had a close encounter with a lightning bolt, and some things happened as a consequence of that. Over the next 3 years, I couldn't sleep, lost my job, lost my career, for that matter. I had memory problems. I was impulsive. I said things that I didn't necessarily wouldn't have said if I'd had that little device in my mind that says, wait a minute. And I couldn't proofread things. I would send material out, and it would have typos in it, something I'm not a person normally does. And I look at that little poem in the front of the order of service, and I guess my hat was in China too. It's like, it was kind of strange. So 2 years ago, I began a book. I started writing this book. I dragged together the pieces that I remembered that I liked from my life, like I used to study ancient history. I know something about law. I know a lot about prisons and how they operate. And so I dragged those strands together and I started writing this book. And it went through drafts and drafts and drafts. I'm now on the 10th draft. And it's interesting because it really allowed me to see myself. It's a mirror. I can see when I go through this again. Just this morning on the 10th draft, I discovered that a chapter was totally out of place. That somebody had been caught and somebody else was talking about them at the wrong time. They couldn't have known that. So there's a bunch of strange stuff like that. And the theme of the book, interestingly enough, is from chaos comes form, and from form chaos. And so the book began to be a kind of a metaphor for me as I worked through it, as I saw these flaws that I had to keep going back over again and over again to fix. So people ask me, are you going to get the book published? And of course, people want to do that. But really, the purpose of the book wasn't so much that. It wasn't the product. It was more the process of writing the book. And the process of writing the book created a kind of healing for me as I began to accept the things that I didn't find acceptable before. And that was a spiritual quest. And so for me, this writing of the book has been a spiritual adventure. And in that way, it's been a rebirth.
Inside Spring. A couple weeks ago, we returned from California, well, probably a little longer than that, maybe a month ago, and everything was just brown. I mean, everything, I looked everywhere, it was just brown, and I'd just come from Bougainvillea and all these incredible plants, lemon trees with 1,000 lemons, lime trees with 1,000 limes, and everything just seemed to be paradisical. And we came back here, and for the first 2 weeks, I just mourned the loss of all of that beauty that was just abundant and flourishing and right in front of my eye. And then I remember one afternoon walking out into the prairie just to see what was happening, because someone asked me, is the prairie starting to green yet? And I said, there's the slightest tint now. But as I walked through our prairie, I began to notice little umbrellas of flowers sticking their little heads this high. Some of them white, puffy, barely noticeable, grayish. Some this chartreuse green, like you see here. Others, the violets, which are just incredible purple, lavender, and white, and have a wonderful fragrance. So I thought, sometimes you have to look a little closer. And then you begin to see the emerging qualities that you so missed from a place that you had been in. A number of people have asked me or mentioned, we're not celebrating Easter, are we? And I said, well, I don't know. That's a good question. And then they would go, why would we? I mean, why would we celebrate Easter? And we're not going to do that kind of, you know, rising out of death spring thing. And I'd say, well, I don't know. And then I wrote my blurb, and I thought, okay, let's see what we got here. And I thought, I don't know what I'm going to say. So yesterday, as I was walking the hills looking for morels, along the oak line that goes for a mile around our property, huge, beautiful oaks, I noticed a vulture flying above me. And then I noticed another vulture flying above me, no matter where I walked. And then by the end of the walk, there were 13 vultures hovering above me. I thought, am I dead meat? But they weren't looking for me, but they seemed to somehow be following me. And I understand from some Native American traditions that vultures, turkey buzzards, are a symbol of purification because they clean up what's died. And they have those scaly feet and heads so that they won't pick up all of that bacteria in a way that'll get under the feathers. And that when they urinate, that urination is up in the sky and it washes off all of the bacteria. It's got a high concentrate of things that disinfect. So of course I began to ask myself, what do I need to purify? And then the question became, what don't I need to purify? But that's the ramblings that happen. But I think it's a good question and it goes in many directions. But I think it's really important to see the overlap of Passover and Easter, because at some place there is no disconnect. From slavery and freedom. Slavery and freedom frame Passover. We are in the midst of that celebration now. Passover commemorates the story of the Israelites' departure from ancient Egypt, led by the prophet Moses, who had been enslaved to Pharaoh, all of the Israelites. Numbers of plagues struck the Egyptians, and after the 10th plague struck Egypt at midnight, killing the firstborn of the Pharaoh to the firstborn of the captive who was held in the dungeon, and all the firstborn of livestock in the land, the Pharaoh said, forget it, we're going to free these Israelites. And so the evening begins in slavery, and in the middle of it, they move on to freedom, the exodus to freedom. The first two nights of Passover, families and friends gather for Seder, a religious feast where the story of the exodus of Egypt is read aloud, and rituals that recall the most important aspects of that narrative are lived and performed. Seder represents Seder participants remember the slavery that reigned during the first half of the night by eating matzah, the flattened bread, the bread of the poorest of the poor, of the destitute, of those who had nothing. It was called the poor person's bread. And then they had bitter herbs, which symbolized the bitterness of being enslaved, not being free to do what you want, to fulfill your potential, to be a superhero. Though I guess you could be a superhero, there are many instances of that as people who have been enslaved. And then there is the 4 cups of wine that they have to drink. 4 cups of wine. And with each cup of wine, I guess the children ask questions and they participate. And the salt water they have that they dip things into represents what royalty used to do. So now they have allowed themselves to lift themselves up from the bottom and be a part of what's considered the top. The salt water also symbolizes the tears. The tears. On the Passover Seder, a plate lays a roasted egg. So, when we think of the kids looking for eggs today, we can look back way before the time of Jesus and know that the egg symbolized the roundness of the universe, that fragile but strong shell that protects life that is growing. It's constantly moving, it's in a circle, and it reminds us that we are all born from an egg. So we go back to the original source of our own lives. An egg is the traditional food for mourners and was brought to Jerusalem after the destruction of the temple. The egg symbolizes the springtime, since Passover is celebrated during the springtime. And at the end of all the festivities, the children play a very important game, often at the Seder celebration. There's a piece of matzah that's hidden somewhere. And it's a game to see who can find it first. And the person who finds it first gets a prize. So another part of the Easter egg hunt, I think, gets lifted up from history to now. it's hard to say with any certainty what in the Bible Jesus might have said. And there's been a lot of studies in the past 30 years about what that might be. And there's still lots of dissension, but it's clear that there are a number of sayings that point to some authenticity, or enough authenticity that they're often attributed to Jesus. The first four kind of come together as a core set of values that represent a transition from a past way of looking at things to a new way of looking at things. Seek and you will find. Seek. Seek. Don't be passive and let things just happen. Seek, whether it's through science, whether it's through education, whether it's recovering the capacity to do something that you feel good about, like writing a book after your brain has been damaged, or after postpartum depression, or if you are ailing from some kind of dementia or cancer, or whatever it is that makes you feel less than worthy. You need to seek. And if you're feeling good, it's even more important to seek because you've got the energy to do it. And then find. Keep on seeking so you can find what brings meaning to your life. The hidden will be revealed. There is nothing hidden that will not be revealed. So there's no sense that there is this huge mystery that's untouchable, unknowable, that you can actually touch what's hidden. It will be revealed. It is not a secret. It is not in some kind of vapor world. It's here. It's now. The kingdom is like a mustard seed. It is the smallest of all seeds, but when it falls on prepared soil, it produces a large plant and shelter for birds of the sky. So the smallest thing can grow into the most amazing shelter for little birds, for life. So the smallest effort that we make, the first step that we make to discover something, to write the book, to discover why this bug does this thing, may lead to huge connections that ultimately lift up meaning in such a way that it is revealed. And the fourth, probably the one that I resonate most with, is the kingdom of heaven will not come by watching for it. It will not be said, look here, look here. Rather, the kingdom is spread out upon the earth. It is spread out upon the earth, and people don't see it. It's like me not being able to see all the life in that prairie as I just was looking at the brown. I was missing the purples and the hot reds and the blues and all the stuff that I had just left in California. But there they were. And if you know anything about the prairie, 60% of its life is underneath the surface. So you have to dig deep sometimes to see all of that life. That kingdom is here, or the queendom, whatever word you want to use, paradise, a good life. A life that is more than about tweeting and texting and looking on the computer and watching your favorite series for 8 hours in a row because you can get it downloaded and streaming right into your house with some good wine and some cheese. There you go. You're set, right? Well, that's not bad. But I don't think that's where this wideness of life's best experiences are found. It's not in things. It's not in some button. It's not in a bank account. It's not even in a textbook. Rex Weiler, the author of the 12 Things That Jesus Likely Said, believes that the first four sayings launch a radically new message to first century peasants. Knowledge begins with personal seeking. You have to be willing to seek, not social convention, not what everyone else does or believes. In Jewish tradition, the kingdom of God conveyed a promise that a just ruler sent by God would free common people from foreign oppression. But Jesus said no to that. You free yourself now. You don't do it vis-a-vis some amazing power beyond our grasp. You have to take, again, personal responsibility. What a huge transition from saying, oh, someone else will do it, or some other entity will do it. No, we have to do it. I have to do it. I can't wait for you or anybody else here. I have to do it. But together, well, we'll get to that. Don't rely on someone else. Spiritual or self-knowledge, whatever you want to call it, that incredible coherence when everything comes together with clarity that just puts you in the zone, comes from your active participation in seeking. In this kingdom, self-reflection is not simply a private matter. It doesn't stay inside. It's not something that you own. It's something to be shared. It's something to be given. It's something to be exchanged. That's another formation that I think Jesus really helped the peasants of that time understand. That they had to do that transformation. They had to find heaven now. They didn't have to pay for it. It wasn't to be bought. It wasn't some elite club. It wasn't any of those things. It was the power that comes from living in a centered way. So another one that I read as the chalice reading, don't hide your light. No one lights a lamp and puts it under a basket. Well, we do sometimes, I think. Or in a hidden place. Rather, one puts it on a lampstand so that all who pass shall see it. Sharing that sense of, oh my gosh, this is so exciting. Listen to me, share with me, tell me your story. Tell me what really makes you sing. Where does that happen freely in our culture? How many people are really interested in what makes you so happy or so sad that they will listen to you with an open heart, an open mind, and just be there for you? How often does that happen? And action, not ritual. Jesus was all about action. You'll know who they are by what they produce. Since when do people pick grapes from thorns or figs from thistles? It's in the action of doing the right thing, going to the right place. And then there's a sense of a public mission. Cure the sick, feed the hungry, help the poor. Serious, serious shifting away from all the grandeur that royalty and guards and eunuchs and harems and all those things represented to most of the middle class of that day. They aspired for that kind of wealth and grandeur. How different is it today? The historical Jesus wanted people to discover the light that was inside them. What would illuminate the answers that would help them continue if they had been catapulted into crisis? Or if you were at a juncture in your life when you thought, I don't know what the heck I'm doing. You have to seek inside for that place that illuminates the possibilities. So again, it's about active participation in developing your own life, but being willing to receive in that kind of serendipitous way, to be in the now. Jesus called for the liberation from that which oppresses, and he was there for the poor. And our helping hands, I think that we prove that we are. But what else could we do? Not that there aren't poor among us, but what else could we do? Are we self-satisfied because we have a nice helping hand Sunday and we do the happy kitchen? Is there more that this fellowship could do to help create a progressive culture which takes care of all its people, not just a select few? Well, this is the kind of Passover and, you know, like a quick sketch of Jesus as who I think and believed he was as a historical change agent. And now I would like to move on to a personal journey, which I think illustrates some of this, hopefully. When I was a freshman at Lawrence University in Appleton, Wisconsin, that first February, it did not get above zero. Now that's cold. Some days, it didn't get above -5. That's cold. So when spring came, you can believe that there was more than fever. It was a tsunami. Let's get outside. Let's do things. And as the trees started to leaf out and the bushes bloomed and the tulips rose, boy, no one could study. And I can remember one Friday night thinking, oh, okay, I'll go play Frisbee. Let's have some pizza. Let's drink some beer. You know, this is Wisconsin beer, the capital of the country, practically. But anyway, all of a sudden, I got this feeling. I said, hey, guys, I'm going to just take off. I'll see you later. So I started walking through old Appleton, Wisconsin, towards the river, the Fox River. And I just could see life everywhere, all that unfolding, tender green, as if you wanted to put it in your mouth to taste it. It looked so fresh and inviting. And then smelled the lilacs blooming. It was a heady experience, but it brought me further and further away from town where people lived into the woods, and night began to fall. And for some reason, I didn't want to turn around. So I walked into the night, and it was a dark, dark night. I walked along the Fox River into the woods, and I ended up in a Catholic cemetery. And about 2, I imagine, the clouds came over, and they put a curtain over the moon, and I found myself in a grotto, where all the images of crucifixion and of death, the darkness being in that cave, the clamminess, the feeling that I was being sucked into something that could destroy me was very strong. That darkness wanted me. That feeling that you have as a freshman who doesn't quite know what the heck they're going to do with their life. You're just trying to figure it out, and you can't figure it out, and you find yourself in the middle of the night in a grotto in a Catholic cemetery, and you're freezing. You're freezing. You're just freezing. So why don't you just get up and go back to the dorm? I couldn't. I was paralyzed. Absolutely paralyzed. I could not move. I sat there for hours in that grotto. I don't remember what I was thinking about, but I can remember the terror just filling every part of my body, freezing with terror. And then, for some reason, I got the impulse to stand up and start walking. And as I started walking, I noticed that pearly gray on the horizon. And as it grew brighter. All of a sudden, 1,000 blackbirds went over my head, and they were cawing at me and cawing at me and cawing at me, making me feel like I was crazy because I was sleep-deprived, I was cold, and they were just cawing and cawing. I started to run, and I ran, and I ran, and then all of a sudden, I saw the sun start rising over the treetops, and I jumped over the fence, and the blackbirds flew to the river. And then I had this moment, an epiphany really, that said, find illumination, seek what brings light. Don't dwell on darkness. Don't dwell on death that holds you and won't let you go. If there is death, let it be a transformative thing over time. Seek the light that helps you grow. I thought, whoa. That's pretty cool. So I thought, oh, now it's time to go back and get some food and get a nap. And so I did that. So when crisis opens our lives wide open, we have the opportunity to touch the archetypal themes of what it truly means to be human. The personal and universal intersect. I don't like the image of the cross a lot, but I think that there is something very interesting about its symbolism. This represents the arms stretched out as wide as you possibly can stretch them. And then the vertical, this would be chronos, chronological time, you know, your day-to-day things, I gotta go pick up, blah, 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 at 9, and then I have to drop off something at 7, and then I have to write this paper, and I have to respond to that email, and I have to cook this dinner, and blah, 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 blah. That's this. But sometimes you can stretch beyond those limits and find the beauty of the oak tree that's blooming and the beautiful tree that Sam Lacy planted 20 years ago that we uncovered, what's it called? The dogwood, thank you. Yes, I saw it outside my office window one day and there was this just little bit of white peeking out and there were all these cedar trees choking it. And now it stands over 20 feet tall, no longer strangled, a symbol of beauty. So the vertical is kairos, which would be everything that brings you deep into the ground, that lets all those things that have been useful to you but are no longer useful, maybe it's the loss of a father, the loss of brain cells, the loss of a child, the loss of a career, the fear for a son or daughter or mother. We have to let those things have their movement. They have to be moving. That's what happens under the earth. Things change. They compost. They grow rich with the possibility to nurture that upward growth. So where is the center of that? The intersection is the heart of that chronos, kairos, the heart. Place where if we open to one another and to the needs that we each carry and to the needs that are outside these walls, we can rise and we can compost and we can stretch. So in that way, that image really has power for me. But not for one moment do I think that Jesus died for my sins. For one moment, I do not believe that I have to accept him as my savior so that I will be admitted to some place that I'm not sure exists, a realm that I don't know about. But what I do know about is the heaven that's possible to create here on earth now, together. So the 12th thing that Jesus might have said in this book by Weiler is, when you make the two into one, you will become children of humanity. And when you say, mountain, move, it will move. So the opportunity for renewal to do its work, for spring to bring all of winter up and out and blooming vigorously, is here amongst us as people. It's here. It's now. It's not someplace else. It's not in the video game. When you die, it probably won't be all the things that you worked your tail off that you'll be thinking about. My experience with people who are dying, who are at their last moments, is that they're often remembering their mother, their father, something that held them in love. So isn't that our work now? To hold ourselves and others in love. That is the deep message of this Easter Passover renewal service. Now, I would be very interested in hearing other people who have had journeys that illuminate something that has called them to move through some kind of chaos or darkness or what seemed impossible. So that you are, it could be a small thing, but a very important thing. Does anybody have something they'd like to share along those lines or anything else in regards to renewal? Renewal, deep renewal, high renewal, wide renewal that comes from the heart. Dick?
Dick Cattell. I was instantly reminded of a period in my life, which was after medic school, after residency, when I was in analytic training, which was about a 6-year long period, commuting to Chicago from Denver. And I always had trouble with procrastination and finishing things. And to finish the and be certified as an analyst, I had to write a paper. And we studied lots of theory, and I had a lot of experience as a therapist by that time. And I found that I have got to do this, and I went. Walking in the woods, we have lots of woods close. I would go running to handle the pressure and the anxiety and the hard work of doing the writing. We had to write up our cases, and my paper was on finishing and the difficulties of finishing. And I ran an awful lot in the woods, but I did accomplish my goal.
Thank you, Dick. So what allows for transformation, Mike?
I was just sitting here thinking back to a time when I was extremely ill, and in 97 I had an autoimmune disease attack that was nearly fatal, and I was sitting here just now thinking about when I came out of that and how I felt about life and the world, and just how it gave me a different perspective and how I've kind of lost that again, and wondering to myself why it takes such a big thing to happen to gain perspective like that. And so it's been kind of an interesting little bit of introspection for me, and I just wanted to say thanks for reminding me about that. So
thank you. Other thoughts? Certainly something's brewing.
is a small thing, not a big thing, but I was a Peace Corps volunteer in Morocco many years ago, and I was fairly new to the country, and I was going to visit another volunteer who lived clear across on the other side of the country, so it was going to take me almost a day to get to her site and about five different modes of transportation. And I started off with an overnight bus ride, and you know, I was getting harassed by men occasionally and everything, and I get to the bus stops, and I'm going to have to get on another bus or a taxi, and it's 4 a.m, and I'm sitting at the cafe waiting for the next bus. It's not going to leave until 6, and it's freezing cold, and I forgot, her site's in the desert, and I thought, well, it's going to be hot, and I forgot in the nighttime it got cold. So I'm sitting there shivering in this cafe that's not even open yet. I'm sitting outside just shivering, and I'm grumbling to myself about this country and these people that are picking on me and blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden, I feel myself enveloped in this warm wool blanket, and this man who runs the cafe came over, and he put a big blanket on me, he wasn't at the cafe. He was at one of the bus stands, and he saw that I was shivering, and he brought me a wool blanket, and he asked the cafe owner to open up early to give me some coffee. And it just reminded me to keep an open mind and to always, you know, not judge everyone based on just a few people's actions. So that, in a way, I guess, was a renewal of, it made me have a much better experience in that country. Every time I would get frustrated, I would think about, you know, the little acts of kindness.
Mm. Thank you.
Amy Stormo, and as much as I don't like talking in front of a bunch of people, this conversation just reminds me of a time in my life when it was my sophomore year of college, and I went to a study abroad. I was over in France for a semester, and it was a very transformational semester for me in my life. And as the semester kind of was dwindling down, my life was kind of crashing all over the place around me, in a different country where I didn't really have a whole lot to, you know, cling to. And fortunately, the people in my program allowed me to kind of take my last week, and I went to Teze, France. And I don't know if many of you know kind of what goes on there, but there's a community, a spiritual community in Teze, France, and I'd heard about it from a couple of people. I thought, well, you know, I have nothing to lose. I got to get out of here. I got to do something. And so I hopped a bus ticket to someplace I, you know, had no idea where I was really going, but found my way there. And it's a community where when you get there, lots of folks camp, but they have some rooms that you can, you know, sleep. But it's a very interwoven community. Everyone that comes there, they have a job to help keep the community going. You work. I ended up working for like the garbage committee or whatever, you know, so I'd help with trash pickup and that kind of thing the whole week that I was there. But you know, some folks cook food, other folks help with all kinds of different duties. But through the week that I spent there, knowing absolutely no one in this place where I knew nothing and no one, and I felt like my life was crashing down, I ended up coming out of that week in a very different place, and just kind of speaking again to that community aspect, and, you know, allowing yourself to be open to others, and use what you have to help others, and taking from them what you need, was just a very transformational experience for me.
Thank you, Amy. Anybody have anything else they'd like to share? Okay, let's sing our closing hymn. 201, Glory, Glory, Hallelujah. Glory. sweeter, so much sweeter, as I laid my burden down. Sweeter, so much sweeter, since I laid my burden down. Like dancing, hallelujah, feel like dancing, laid my burden. Glory, glory, hallelujah, feel like I laid my burden down. Shining all around me, Mary Oliver says this: to live in the world, we must be able to do three things: to love what is mortal, to hold it against your bones, knowing your life depends on it, and when the time comes, to let it go. To let it go.